Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
We turn now to some who believe that J.D. Vance's portrayal of Appalachia misrepresents a region that has long been mischaracterized and derided. Joining us for the remainder of the hour is Anthony Harkins and Meredith McCarroll, who are co-editors of the forthcoming book entitled Appalachian Reckoning, A Region Responds to Hillbilly Elegy. Dr. Meredith McCarroll, who grew up in Waynesville, North Carolina, is director of writing and rhetoric at Bowdoin College and the author of the recently published Unwhite, Appalachia, Race, and Film. Welcome, Meredith.
Thank you.
And also with us is Dr. Anthony Harkins, who is a professor of history at Western Kentucky University and is the author of Hillbilly, A Cultural History of an American Icon. Welcome, Anthony.
Thank you very much.
You both write that Vance presents his version of hillbilly culture, but that, quote, the people and region belie simplistic definitions or characterizations of a monolithic and predeterminative hillbilly culture, as Vance labels it. Meredith, I want to start with you. Do you believe there is such a thing as hillbilly culture? And if so, how would you define the notion of a hillbilly culture?
I would just probably pluralize it. I would say that, sure, there are probably hillbilly cultures, and I think that Vance has the right to write about and think about and identify with the hillbilly culture that makes sense for him. I think that there are probably lots of different ways to, I know that there are lots of different ways to live in the mountains and to identify as being from the mountains. And so some people would use the term hillbilly, and Tony Harkins can say more about the term and the history of the idea of hillbilly. But I think that there are many different ways to be from the mountains and to identify from the mountains as being from the mountains, and that's why I would want to pluralize the idea of hillbilly cultures rather than just one hillbilly culture.
Okay. Tony, what's your definition of hillbilly culture?
Well, I don't really, I mean, my work has always been on the conceptions of the hillbilly rather than the people defining it for themselves, and I think those are different things. And I think one of the problems with J.D. Vance's book and his approach to it is he doesn't really acknowledge that the word hillbilly is a very vexed one and means very different things in different contexts to different peoples. And in some cases, it can be an embracing term of identity, but from outside the region, it can be very much of a derogatory one. And without acknowledging those distinctions, I think he kind of eludes them together, and so they disappear, and it makes it fine for everyone to just throw around the word hillbilly without thinking about its implications.
Okay. You both write that you believe hillbilly elegy brings the opportunity to, quote, reclaim Appalachia and to help those unfamiliar with the region to recognize its complexities and its diversities. What are those complexities and diversities? And Tony, I'll start with you.
Well, I think there's, I think particularly in the context of the recent election, there's been a sort of sense that everyone in Appalachia is a coal miner or comes from a coal mining family. They're all suffering from drug abuse, and they're all kind of living in a pre-modern world. And certainly coal mining has always been very central to the Appalachian experience, but there's very few coal miners anymore. And it's a much more diverse place economically. It's a much more diverse place socially and culturally. And one of the objectives of our book is to expose and to give a space for presentation of that diversity, whether it's racial, gender identity, urban versus rural, and so forth.
Okay. We're coming up on a break, and we're going to pick back up. And Meredith, I want you to answer that question as well. Give us your perspective on what it means to have the notion of Appalachia and what its complexities and diversities are. We're talking with Anthony Harkins from Western Kentucky University and Meredith McCarroll from Bowdoin College about their forthcoming book, Appalachian Reckoning, A Region Responds to Hillbilly Elegy, and also to J.D. Vance, who's going to be here in Charlotte tomorrow evening at Queens University. We'll come back and pick up our conversation. This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Michael Bitzer, sitting in for Mike Collins, and we're talking with the co-editors of the book forthcoming, Appalachian Reckoning, A Region Responds to Hillbilly Elegy. We were talking before the break, and Anthony shared with us his perspective. Meredith, what do you see as some of the complexities and diversities within the region of Appalachia?
Yeah, I think that as with almost any other place in the country, there's incredible complexity and diversity. So there are different kinds of people doing different kinds of jobs. They have different, you know, races, ethnicities, gender identities, sexualities, religious beliefs. All of those things are, you know, of course, diverse in any place that you could point to throughout the country. And the same is true of Appalachia. The reason that it seems worth talking about with Appalachia is that there is a tendency to see this region that spans 13 states, that is a large region that is not only diverse in terms of the people, but diverse in terms of the landscape and therefore some of the economic opportunities that are available in those states. There's a tendency to see Appalachia as one thing. And I think that in the book, one of the things that we're trying to do is recognize the ways that when, and this did not start with Vance, there's a long history of people, you might call it, some people talk about the scapegoating of Appalachia, other people just talk about the ways that Appalachia has long been portrayed as one monolithic place. And Vance, in our opinion, is contributing to that idea. And it matters to me as someone who is living outside of the region right now, and I'm very keenly aware of the ways that well-intentioned people, like some of my friends and colleagues in Maine, feel that they have a good understanding of Appalachia after reading Hillbilly Elegy. And it's made me really want to kind of say, okay, that's one perspective, yeah. But there are a lot of other perspectives, too.
And I want to stay with you, Meredith. You grew up in Waynesville, North Carolina. That's mm-hmm. considered part of Appalachia. I grew up in Pickens County in South Carolina. And you write in the book that you lamented, quote, the ways that you shifted your accent as you spent more time in academia. If you don't mind me asking, why did you feel the need to do so?
Well, the same reason a whole lot of people feel the need to do so, because I moved away. I went to grad school in Boston, and when I first moved to Boston, it became really clear to me that people were judging me based on the way I talked and judged me based on the answer that I gave when I said where I was from. And I was shocked by how often I was met with the banjo lick from Deliverance, and I would say that I was from Appalachia. So I realized that rather than having those conversations, I could sort of try to avoid them. And so I changed the way I spoke to some extent as best I could and tried to fit in so that people would not judge me based on something superficial like my accent, which I write in the book is a thing that I deeply regret because I didn't really need to change the way that I talked.
Tony, you look at the cultural aspect of Appalachia. Where did this stereotype, the banjo, you know, some people will say, oh, you're from the area Deliverance, the movie. Mm-hmm. Where did that start and how did that become so ingrained in people's imagination and perception of this region that really stretches from New York all the way down to Alabama and Mississippi?
Well, it's a very long history and a very long story, but certainly it dates from, you know, the colonial era, but it really accelerates, I think, in the late 19th century with the development of extractive industries, particularly coal mining, but lumbering and other things as well. And as northern money and industrialists come into the region, one way they can kind of justify their transformation of the region is that they need to uplift it and that these people are backwards and ignorant and they need, you know, uplifting through modern industrial capitalism and civilization. And then I think it gets picked up through the, you know, spate of feuds that are taking place in the late 19th century, which then become central to media constructions of the region in film, in novels, and eventually in television and advertising and movies, you know, modern movies as well. And what's striking to me is how long-lasting these stereotypes persist way after they're still being represented in the media. I have students who say, you know, when they leave the state, well, first of all, it's not just Appalachia. If you say the word Kentucky, you get the same sorts of reactions. Mm-hmm. But they say, oh, you have shoes, right? Or, oh, you've got all your teeth. Mm-hmm. And these are things that go back way before Deliverance. And, you know, I haven't seen representations recently, fortunately, of shoeless mountain people, but those images are so ingrained in our sort of collective cultural consciousness that they are still called up sort of effortlessly. And whenever you say the word Appalachia or mountains or hillbilly or any of these sorts of terms.
In your forthcoming book, Appalachian Reckoning, A Region Response to Hillbilly Elegy, you both include not just essays about the region, but poems, short stories, even a recipe and photographs to serve as a response to Vance. Why did you take that approach in terms of creating the response?
So when I read Hillbilly Elegy, I didn't love the book, but I didn't think much about it. And then it was the way that the book resonated with so many people and the way that people seemed to understand me through that book that made me want to have some sort of response. But my response isn't really to Hillbilly Elegy. It isn't really to J.D. Vance. My response is for the people who actually want to understand the region. And it's an attempt to show the diversity of voices, of types of literature coming from the space, of images coming from artists in the region. And so for me, it was really important to have poets, fiction writers. There's no fiction in there, but there are fiction writers who are writing memoirs, mm-hmm. and a collection of personal narratives that are not directly addressing J.D. Vance, but are simply there to sort of spread, I guess in some ways I think about it as passing the mic, that J.D. Vance tends to step up to the mic and speak for the place, and this is an attempt to pass the mic around and realize that more people have something to say.
Tony, as co-editor of the book, what did you find to be most valuable to the authors to talk about their beliefs about Appalachia?
Well, I mean, I think it's been a wonderful experience working with Meredith and bringing together things that often are kept apart. This is not entirely new to Appalachian studies, so, you know, we're working in a tradition of this, but combining scholarship and personal reflections and artistic expressions, I think really complicates the whole story. And we have scholars who are writing, you know, strong scholarship, but it's very much shaped by their personal experiences of being Appalachian. And then we have artists who have their work has been affected by the scholarly accounts as well. And so it's this blending of scholarship and personal creativity and personal experience that I think makes the whole so much greater than its parts.
Okay. J.D. Vance made an appearance at this year's Appalachian Studies Association, and he was met with protest, especially from a group called, and I think this is most appropriate, Y'all, or Young Appalachian Leaders and Learners. And you write in the introduction that there is a problematic generational divide. What is that divide, and where is the source of tension coming?
Well, I was at that panel, and it was very interesting. It was very much the people who had invited J.D. Vance were part of the older group within Appalachian Studies, for sure. And I think they saw it as an opportunity to reach out and to sort of not really address hillbilly elegy. It was a panel on opioid epidemic. And, you know, and there was a lot of important information in that. But I think that a lot of the younger people felt like to not address hillbilly elegy was just unacceptable. And they were, you know, many people in that group were very angry at J.D. Vance in the way that they feel he's distorted the portrayal of Appalachia in their own lives. I thought it was quite powerful and useful for a for an organization born out of protest in many ways, out of the ways that Appalachia was being represented then, to sort of have to confront this these competing ideas within itself, and you know, it got heated because it was because there's a lot of issues at stake. But I also feel like good things have come out of it, and I think there's been some really powerful discussion within the within the group. You know, we don't see our book as positioning on. Fully on one side or the other. We have contributors in the book who were part of both sides of that debate within the conference. But again, I think it just shows the diversity and the complexity of the region.
Hillbilly Elegy obviously hit a political chord with the country in 2016, and some would contend that the resentment of white working class propelled President Donald Trump into office. Vance contends he didn't vote for Trump, but voted for a third-party candidate. But what impact do you think this book has had in the discussion on the nation's politics, not just of the region, but as the country as a whole?
I think that after the election of Trump in 2016, there was a real this moment where a lot of people looked around to try to understand the country that they thought that they knew, and that suddenly felt unfamiliar. And so I think that there was a reaching to try to find an answer. And the answer is, the actual answer to explain the election of Donald Trump, I think, is quite complex. An easy answer for some, or one part of that answer, was to point to places in the country and types of people to say, well, they must have elected him. Mm. They did this thing. And I think that the position that Vance takes in Hillbilly Elegy when he talks about Appalachia allows people who are less familiar with the region to blame the region, the people in the region, because Vance says things like, we got ourselves into this, we'll get ourselves out, and really draws on this ideology of stubborn violence and independence that is sort of separatist, I think. And mm-hmm. So people around the country read this book and said, okay, I get what happened. I don't know why they would have voted for Trump, but they did, and he's telling me just to leave it alone. But, Tony, I'd love for you to weigh in, too, if you have thoughts.
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, I think the book, the sort of phenomenon that the book became was heavily influenced by the election and the Trump phenomenon, and that those things became fused together. And as Meredith says, I think people were desperate for explanations, and they were reaching around for it. And this seemed to be part of the explanation. You know, and I think it's not utterly untrue that there are connections there, and there is absolutely a, not just in Appalachia, but across the country. There's been a fundamental transformation of the economy, and some people have adjusted to that more easily than others. There's been a fundamental transformation of our sort of sociocultural expectations, and those have changed in some and not others. Now, Appalachia has, you know, people who embrace Trump and people who repudiate Trump. And Bernie Sanders did very well in a number of primaries as well. So it's politically as complex as anywhere else, I think. But it's easier to see it as a kind of unified. One of our contributors talks about Trumpalachia and how one of the reports he saw basically said it was one big state. you know, and all of its electoral votes kind of went as one. Well, that's just sort of ridiculous to think in such simplistic ways about complex political realities.
Right. We're coming up on the end of the show, but I want to ask you both, give you 30 seconds for both. And Meredith, if you could start us off. So what does it mean to be Appalachian?
I think that I can only tell you what it means for me to be Appalachian.
Sure.
I would never claim to say that there is an answer to that question of what it means to be Appalachian. For me, growing up in an upper middle class family in a small town in western North Carolina, being Appalachian meant a connection to family traditions around food, a connection to place, an understanding of a deep history of a place, and all kinds of ways that I talk, ways that I interact with people that I didn't really understand until I left the place. But I think that what's important to me is that I don't think that there is one way to be Appalachian. There are many, many ways to be Appalachian.
Okay. Tony?
Well, I'm not Appalachian and wouldn't claim to be. I've always been a student of it rather than, someone who grew up there. But my sense of it is exactly what Meredith said. It's a sense of place and identity, a connection to the land. I do think in a way that is somewhat unique in the American story, not entirely, but that value place and family over, and oftentimes over, material advancement at the cost of those things. And also in a recognition and understanding of the deep, rich, and valuable culture that has emerged there over the centuries.
Anthony Harkins of Western Kentucky University and Meredith McCarroll of Bowdoin College are co-editors of Appalachian Reckoning, A Region Response to Hillbilly Elegy, which will be available for purchase in March of 2019. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.